with me. Spirit of life and of love, known to us by many names, we do ask for your abiding presence, not just for ourselves alone, but perhaps especially this morning for those who are suffering around the world. Anytime we see the news these days, it's enough to break one's heart wide open, to send tears streaming down our faces. And so this morning, though it may feel like helpers have indeed fled, we hope your abiding presence might remain with those in harm's way. Those in Palestine and Israel, those in the streets of Victoria, British Columbia, those who are suffering from poverty and illness, those wrestling with Ebola and addiction, those who have lost a sense of hope, who feel that their helpers have indeed fled. And help us to save just a bit of that compassion and kindness for ourselves and those closest to us. For we too need hope. We too need blessing. We too need to see occasional signs of grace. So with all of this on our hearts, we sing, we cry, we lift our prayers in hopes that one day might be a day of peace and hopefulness and love for all people. So might it be. So may it be. And amen. Wrestling with addiction. This morning's reading is a simple poem by the poet Tim Nolan. It's a poem entitled Prayer Chain. My mother called to tell me about an old classmate of mine who was dying on the parish prayer chain, or was very sick, or destitute, or it had not worked out, the marriage, or the kids were all on drugs, and all the old mothers were praying intensely for all the pain of their children, and for life. They were praying for life. In their quiet rooms, sipping decaf coffee, I bet they've been praying for me at times. So I'll find my way, so I won't rob a bank. I'll take them, the mystical prayers of old mothers. It matters, all this patient and persistent love. When it comes to living with those struggling with addiction, or in struggling with our own addictions, patient and purposeful love is often in short supply, but is sorely needed. In fact, there are not many challenges that our world faces this day that couldn't use a little patient and purposeful love. I'd be willing to wager that in this room this morning, all of our lives have been touched by addiction. To widely varying degrees, for sure, but I would imagine that everyone in this sanctuary this morning has either known someone who has struggled with an addiction or is a recovering addict themselves. The stigma is still strong, so the addictions will often go unmentioned and unacknowledged in our midst. But the prevalence of addiction means that addiction is not an us and them issue, not a we who don't have the problem and they, those people who do. It's an us problem. Not an us and them problem. Not a what will we do for those people out there who are addicts, but what will we do for our own, our siblings and our parents, our children and our aunts and our uncles. What will we do for ourselves who are trying to free ourselves and those who are trying to free themselves from addiction's grip? We shy away from talk about addiction, I think, because it is so scary in its unpredictability, in the way that it can shatter lives and take loved ones away from us in an instant. Addiction can have unbearable consequences. And I don't know about you, but even though I seldom find the stories in the news about celebrities who have fallen victim to addiction tragic, I was really deeply moved by the end of Philip Seymour Hoffman's life. Many of you may remember the actor Philip Seymour Hoffman, who died about 6 months ago from a heroin overdose. Now, when you read about his life story, here was a man who had addiction problems decades before, but had managed to kick the problem and been clean and sober for at least 25 years. He had been nominated for multiple Academy Awards. He had won for his role as Truman Capote in Truman. He was really at the height of his career. He was 46 years old, and he fell back into heroin's grasp and died, leaving behind 3 young children after decades of sobriety. By all measures, he was successful. His life should have been a happy one. He had every resource and every inspiration for staying clean. And yet even he fell victim, fell back into heroin's grasp. So I think of that kind of addiction, and then I think also of those other stories of people who have fallen victim to addiction. I was preparing for tonight's Jazz Vespers service, 7 o'clock, UVic, Interfaith Chapel, just a little plug, and I was reading again about Ella Nora Fagan. You know her better as Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday's life, if you want to read a sad story, just read a little bit about Billie Holiday's life. And then you will not find it hard to understand how she could have died at the age of 44 in 1959 of a heroin overdose. A life filled with poverty, filled with racism, filled with abuse. It saddens me to know, friends, that so many people who wrestle with addiction are not that unlike Billie Holiday, are people whose life stories are riddled with abuse and poverty and neglect. So they turn to drugs and alcohol as a means, as a salve, hoping that it will somehow make them feel better or at least help them escape their sense of hopelessness and helplessness. And it never works, does it? The power of addiction and the fact of its hold over so many seems to make it feel like an intractable and near impossible issue to solve. So much so that I think many in our community have just written it off as a never-ending problem that will never be solved. And it seems to me when I read stories like Billie Holiday's in particular, that the deepest way to really get at the root of ending addiction would be to have fewer lives in our world touched by violence and poverty, to have greater opportunity for safety and well-being, greater opportunity for people to make a living in healthy ways, because that would lead fewer people to seek solace in drugs and alcohol. And if fewer people felt the need to escape by retreating into a haze of addiction, well, then maybe, just maybe, we'd have a chance, at least a chance, to make addiction less and less prevalent. But if we aren't able to end drug addiction, if that day still seems too far off, and if clearly criminalizing drugs hasn't worked to end the problem, what can be done? Clearly, part of a full-scale solution would mean more supports and services for mental health and other issues that sometimes overlap with addiction issues. I was pleased to read that British Columbia made a move in that direction earlier this summer when it added $3 million in funding to addictions research and treatment, with a large portion of that funding going toward training additional addiction care providers. But another such option that could work well with that, with those other initiatives, would be a safe consumption site. Now, I understand when I first started looking into this, because the Social Justice Coalition in our congregation, the Social Responsibility Coalition, asked me to look into this issue, I thought, well, I can see why at first some people might hear about a safe consumption site and feel a little uneasy. They might think, isn't that counterintuitive to set up a place, a location for people to actually shoot up drugs? You mean you want to offer a place for addicts to go and shoot up? That doesn't make a lot of sense. Isn't that just continuing the problem rather than helping to solve it? Within my first couple of months here in Victoria, I was at a downtown churches association meeting, and a gentleman came to present about the idea of safe consumption and harm reduction initiatives, and he gave us a whole list of the history of harm reduction here in Victoria. There was, as many of you would probably recall, a fixed site needle exchange in Victoria that opened in 1987, was there for quite some time, and then was eventually shut down. And now there is no fixed site needle exchange. And in fact, this gentleman who came to present to us said that even though many advocates in the community have said it would be a welcome thing to reopen fixed site needle exchange, nobody wants the facility in their backyard. So they can't figure out which neighborhood they would put it in without having such uproar that they can't can't actually get it through. And yet, while we're debating all of this, in 2012 alone, 30 people who were part of the street community in Victoria that could have been helped potentially by these fixed-site needle services lost their lives. So while fixed-site needle exchange might seem to be counterintuitive, might seem to be an odd solution, it turns out when you look at the numbers, when you actually look at the facts and figures around fixed-site needle consumption, they seem to work for everyone. The InSight location in Vancouver, which is the only such location in North America, has been open since 2003 and has served over 2 million people since its opening in those 11 years. The counselors who work at InSight make thousands and thousands of referrals to social and health service or agencies through their work with the clients they see there. The cases of illness and disease among those struggling with addiction has been reduced. The neighborhood around the InSight location is safer. There are fewer used needles lying around, fewer addicts on the street who are high or ill or a danger to themselves or others. And also having this type of facility available has reduced costs across the board in terms of health service costs, social service costs, legal costs, incarceration costs. All of the costs related to injunction drug use are down. So while fixed site needle exchange location is not a panacea, there is clearly value in safe consumption sites as one part of an approach, of a larger approach, to reducing drug addiction and to limiting the harm that follows in its wake. I want to close by looking a little bit at how this topic fits in with our theme for this month of welcome. What does working with and looking into issues of drug addiction have to do with the practice of opening one's heart? It seems to me that the welcome has to do with decreasing stigma and increasing care for those who struggle with addiction, welcoming people to tell their stories. Welcome doesn't mean naive or Pollyanna approaches to hard and multifaceted problems, but in this case, welcome does mean being open to new approaches, looking for ways to care for those we love and those parts of ourselves that struggle with addiction with newly opened hearts and minds. Welcome means moving past shame and blame, which becomes too often a huge piece of the equation when we talk about addiction issues. Welcome means finding and helping to create resources that just might save some lives, even perhaps our own. Welcome means adding people to the prayer chain of which the poet spoke, because it does matter, all this patient and purposeful love. So may our welcome be as loving as we can muster. May we find that we have room in our hearts to welcome all who struggle. May we help find a way to more peace for all those who continue to wrestle with hips put out of joint. May we be part of the blessing that helps create wholeness. So may it be. And amen.